Basically, the National Network of Abortion Funds does two things. We work to help women all across the country and actually internationally to pay for abortions if women do not have the money to do so. And we also work to change things for the long term. So we're working to change policies and lift barriers at the state and national level so that women, you know, one day, every single woman in this country will be able to decide for herself if she wants to have a child or not. And will be able to make her own decision about the health of herself and her family and her future.
More than 30 years ago, the Hyde Amendment was put in place, and it prohibits the use of federal Medicaid for abortions, except in cases of rape, incest, or if the woman's life is in danger. We also know that on a state-by-state level, these restrictions are both enacted and overridden by state funding and state policy. Can you start by giving us some background about Hyde and what kind of impact has it had these 30 plus years?
Well, the Hyde Amendment was passed just 3 years after Roe v. Wade made abortion legal across the United States. And the Hyde Amendment was the first, and it continues to this day to be the biggest, most devastating attack on abortion rights in the United States. Basically, what it did was say that, you know, as you mentioned, federal Medicaid funding will not cover an abortion. So if a woman needs any other kind of care and she's receiving Medicaid, she can get it. She can get prenatal care. She can be sterilized. She can, you know, in many states, she can get birth control, but she cannot make her own decision about having an abortion. So it took that away from poor women. And many states, 33, followed suit and banned state Medicaid funding of abortion. So in practice, we only have about 15 states right now that provide state Medicaid funding for abortion. But what it really meant was that what's supposed to be a constitutional right under Roe v. Wade is only a right for those who have economic resources. So if you don't have the money to exercise your constitutional right, you don't have that right at all.
What was abortion access like before the Hyde Amendment?
Well, in the years between Roe v. Wade and the Hyde Amendment's implementation, hundreds of thousands of low-income women were able to get abortions, you know, through Medicaid coverage. You know, so you go from illegal abortion, which, you know, as you can imagine, you know, primarily affected the poor and women of color, because women who had resources could either, you know, in 1970, they could start going to New York. You know, before that, they could leave the country. But many, you know, so the poorest women already felt, you know, more than anyone else, the brunt of illegal abortion. So once Roe v. Wade passes, it's really poor women and women of color who actually have the greatest benefit, because they, you know, for the first time, really can have their rights and their dignity secured. So in those first years, Medicaid actually paid for a third to a half of all abortions in the United States.
I think there was a lot of hope initially with the onset of this new Congress that there'd be a real opportunity to expand access to family planning services and medically accurate sex education. I mean, for the first time ever, Congress is not only being led by a woman, but also a strong pro-choice Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, from California. But as we saw so deftly play out in both the House and Senate healthcare bills at the end of 2009, it appears the Hyde Amendment will be in full effect. Can you first tell us what the Stupak-Pitts Amendment was about, and then where are we now in regards to the proposed federal health care legislation?
Well, the Stupak-Pitts Amendment, which is passed the House, and as you know, there's also the Nelson Amendment, which is in the Senate. So there's two different severe abortion restrictions in the two versions of healthcare reform that we have right now. You know, and in a way, what they have in common is much more, you know, than what separates them. They're both really onerous, really draconian, enormous setbacks for women, you know, every single woman in this country, but of course will take the biggest toll, at least initially, on women who might receive a subsidy from the federal government for their health care. So Stupak-Pitts basically said, you know, any health care insurance, any insurance program that wants to be able to offer their product to anyone who's getting a subsidy cannot offer abortion coverage. So basically, you know, which insurance companies are going to say, oh, we don't want to be eligible for all the millions of people that are going to get a subsidy. So pretty much that meant that abortion coverage would be eliminated from the new healthcare reform. And, you know, if healthcare works, reform works the way it's supposed to, all of us are supposed to end up in the exchange where it's more competitive, you know, ideally, and costs are lowered. So eventually, everyone who currently has insurance coverage could lose it. So, you know, clearly that's a terrible, terrible loss. And it's an expansion of the Hyde Amendment. What we see on the Senate side, which people are saying is a better compromise, is actually quite terrible as well, completely unacceptable. And what the Senate says is that states may ban insurance coverage of abortion. So what we're going to see is many, many states just banning abortion coverage altogether. You know, states that are already conservative, that already restrict abortion access, that already only have one clinic, that already have poor social services, will very likely just ban abortion coverage altogether. And then the other piece that they added was that people who want to have abortion coverage in their plans will need to, employers and women would need to write two checks. So every single month, you know, you're going to have the bad abortion check and then the rest of healthcare reform. So it's also, you know, I think very clearly on the part of the anti-abortion, anti-woman, anti-human rights forces, an effort to say abortion is not part of healthcare. You know, that's what they're trying to say. And they want to further stigmatize the procedure and further stigmatize women who, you know, who are trying to do the best they can in their lives and make their decisions and take care of their families.
And where are we now in this struggle?
Well, there's a version of a conference committee that's been set up that's trying to reconcile the two versions. And, you know, groups, pro-choice organizations are actively trying to make sure that neither one of these is implemented. You know, but I think what we see is a real deep, fundamental lack of understanding, I think, in Congress, you know, including among those who are Democratic and who are ostensibly pro-choice, and on the part of the administration, of what women's rights mean, about what access to abortion means, and what a constitutional right is.
And for many women, abortion is absolutely out of reach without federal funding. And I don't think that many people know how much an abortion actually costs. Can you tell us what one basically costs?
Yes, an abortion in the first trimester generally costs about $400. I mean, that can range from $350 to $600, but I would say generally $400 to $450 would be the general range. And that's a lot of money to come up with next week. You know, and sometimes when I talk to different groups of people who've never found themselves in that situation, I say, picture what's the amount that if you had to come up with next week to safeguard your family and your life and your future, you know, what's that amount? And can you, you know, what would be the amount that would be just too much? You know, for some people, it would be $400. They can't imagine coming up with that. They certainly don't have it in their bank account. For some people, it might be $10,000 because they have that much money. But picture that amount and picture not being able to come up with that and what you would need to do. So that's in the first trimester. But, you know, as you probably know, once you get into the second trimester, the costs go up every single week. So most of the women who are having later abortions are in that situation precisely because they don't have that $400 in the first trimester.
What kinds of barriers do women of color, low-income women, and young women face when they don't have access to safe and healthy reproductive services?
Well, you know, one barrier clearly is the economic barrier to abortion. I think I should also mention that there are other associated barriers. I mean, one barrier is, you know, distance to clinics. So we also help women with travel, because if the clinic is in the next state over, you may not be able to get there, you know, and that that affects, you know, the same groups of women as the economic barrier. Also, you know, in many states, immigrant women face higher barriers than other women, even if they're in a state that does have Medicaid funding for abortion. Very often immigrants have higher barriers to getting Medicaid coverage. They have to wait 5 years, even after they're, you know, made, you know, legal immigrants in this country. So that's a huge barrier. You know, and poor women and women of color and young women often have less access to, you know, high quality contraception, to high quality information about, you know, sex education, about, you know, contraceptive options. So they're also facing those barriers as well. And, you know, also, you know, these same groups of women also face many barriers when they choose to have a baby. You know, so a lot of the women who we're working with, you know, they are also struggling to take care of the children that they have. And, you know, we are absolutely as adamant about the right of poor women and women of color and young women to have the right to care for and parent the children that they do want to have with adequate social supports.
Why is it so vitally important to turn the tide on this particular piece of legislation?
You know, we understand at the National Network of Abortion Defense, because we work with women every single day who are facing, you know, enormous barriers because of the Hyde Amendment. We understand what it will mean to have an expansion of those barriers, to have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands more likely women who are coming to us for support. You know, we know this is completely untenable. So we have been working, you know, for many years to try to raise awareness about what the Hyde Amendment means, what the impact is, and to build a strategy that can lift barriers at the state level and that can eventually lift these federal funding bans, which are discriminatory, which are unjust, which are, you know, issues of racial justice as well as economic justice and women's rights. And, you know, we need to be doing that, you know, so the network is planning to hold a convening with many of the ally groups that have been part of our campaign. You know, we've had a real setback in healthcare reform. You know, we've had a real setback. And what we need to do is come together again. We need to look at what the political environment is. We need to really reaffirm that connection between a right and the ability to exercise it. We need to say that women of color and poor women and young women are going to be at the center of the fight. You know, if we were all united in saying those with the least resources will be at the top of our agenda, that's who we're going to ensure rights for first, those who have the least ability to exercise them right now, then we would be in a really different place. And I think we can get to that place, but it's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take grassroots work, and it's going to take state level work. And, you know, so we're going to bring everybody together. We're going to look at some short-term strategies, and we're going to look at movement building and the long-term fight and all the allies that we need to bring together, also from other movements, to try to really understand what abortion does mean in women's lives and how important it is and how much we stand to lose if we don't fight together.
Stephanie, talk to me a little bit about your current campaign.
So the 30 Years is Enough campaign, we started that campaign in 2006 at the 30-year anniversary of the Hyde Amendment. And we made a lot of progress over the last 3 years. We were able to, you know, raise the awareness in Congress. We were able to get the pro-choice movement really talking about this issue, which they had not been doing for a long time, you know, except within groups like ours and except within women of color groups. So we really got many, many groups to say, yes, this needs to be part of what we're fighting for. But now, you know, we've done a lot of state level work. We've done some grassroots work. We've done some work with champions in Congress. And now it clearly has to be kicked up a huge level so that we can deal with the fallout from healthcare reform. You know, we don't know at this moment how much we're going to lose under healthcare reform in terms of women's access to abortion. But, you know, however that ends up, we're going to need to come together. We're going to need to look at that fallout, what it means for the states, what it means nationally, and we're going to need to figure out who's going to take which piece of this and how we're going to move it forward. And what we're fighting for is for our whole movement to recommit to this as the number one priority.
We've been talking to Stephanie Poggi. She's the executive director of the National Network of Abortion Funds. Stephanie, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.